You see a door. Above the door is written, "Ho ho ho! Santa's treasure box?" Hello to all, and Merry Christmas! This is the Doors and Dungeons Retro Gaming Podcast, and I am your host, Michelle, and thank you for joining. So, first of all, I just want to take a moment to say that I have a Patreon account. That's a new thing that I started recently, and you can join that, and you can get your name in the book, or you can get, you know, other benefits and things like that, and support me so that I can keep doing this podcast and make it cooler and cooler. Because I don't really like talking about money junk, so let's just skip that part now. Okay, next. Where have I been for the past 2 weeks? Well, the answer is, I was sick last weekend, so I didn't get to do any editing. But the weekend before that, I was at Tokyo Comic Con with Yumi and her friend. So, we spent the whole weekend in Tokyo. We went to Akihabara, and we went to Comic Con also, which was at Makuhari Messe. Which is actually kind of outside of Tokyo, but it's close enough. Most people consider it Tokyo, even though it's not. And we also went to the Pokemon Cafe. And that was really neat. So the Pokemon Cafe is right near Tokyo Station. And it's very close to the station. It's also right beside a Pokemon Center kind of thing. Where you can buy toys. And plushies and bajillion other items that cost slightly more than they should. But are really cute and cool. So, we went there, and we had a reservation that our friend loaned us because our friend was going to not be able to make the reservation, and so decided to let someone else have it, and we took it. And so, we got in line and did all that stuff and went in, and it was really, really cool. It was super, super cute, and they have, like, a big display in the middle of the room, and you get, like, a sticker kind of randomly with Pokemon on it, and you get a coaster randomly with a Pokemon on it. And you don't know which one you're going to get. And I got a Chansey and a Blastoise. And then they have a show. And Pikachu comes out. One of those big giant Pikachu stuffed people suits. Comes out and does a dance. And he's wearing like a chef's hat and stuff. And he tried to eat Yumi's food. They had some food that was sitting out to be delivered. And he walked up and was like, "Ooh, this looks delicious." Well, actually, it was like, "Pika, Pika." And they were like, No, you can't eat that. That's for a customer." And he's like, "Pika." And they're like, no, you need to go over here now." And he's like, tried to grab Yumi's food. And then after that, they came out and brought it to Yumi. And I was like, "It's your food. They tried to eat your food." And she's like, "Oh." So that was cute. And they did a little dance. And we almost accidentally got free stuff. But that's another story. And then we went to the Pokemon Center, and it was really cool. So, the Pokemon Cafe is super, super cute. They have food that's Pokemon-shaped, and they have little, like, you can get a coffee with little, like, Pokemon designs drawn in the foam. Like an Eevee, and, what did I get? Oh, I got a Squirtle. No, I think Yumi got a Squirtle, and I got a Oddish, because I think Oddish is really, really cute. And you could get a plate to take home. You could buy with your food. And also the glasses. So I got one of the glasses. One of the glass that from the drinks. So that was cool. If you ever get a chance to, if you're ever in Tokyo, reserve ahead of time through online to get to that. Because it is really, really crowded. And there was a line of people waiting to try and get in. Like in case someone canceled or something. And of course, I don't think any of them really got in. But, you know, whatever. So then after that, we went to Akihabara, and I took them to a couple of stores, Super Potato, which I think is really cool. Yumi's friend Joe was really impressed with that, because I don't think he ever seen anything quite like that. And Super Potato is just a really neat store. If you've never been to it, It's a little overpriced. I wouldn't recommend buying too much stuff there. But it's great. Well, they've got a good selection. They also got a really good sort of display of stuff. There's really just... It's stuff that you dream of just everywhere. Like, oh, this thing that I wanted when I was 10, or this thing that I saw on the internet that I've never seen anywhere in real life, and it's there in a case or, you know, on a shelf. You know, it's like just a stack of Famicom disk systems and, you know, all kinds of stuff there. There's videos online, so check that out if you've never looked at Super Potato. Look at Super Potato. And check that out if you ever go to Tokyo. We also went to Beep, which is my favorite store. And it's downstairs, and I remember when we got there, there was, like, the stairway, and they looked at it, and they were like, where are we going? And I was like, don't worry, it's cool. And they were like, what? Why is this in a basement? And there was, like, this Beeps had its, like, 8-bitty music playing that they play. And they were like, this is so weird. And we went inside, and they were like, wow, look at all these old computers. It's so cool. And, yeah. And we went to Mandarake and looked at all of the different, like, manga and stuff like that. And just, you know, all the stuff. Figures and things. Like you do in Akihabara. And in Beep, I bought a box of floppy disks. And I have now recently gotten in the mail 2 sets of floppy disks. One of them, the 5 1/4-inch floppy disks, one of them was 140 of them. And the 2 HD disks, which means high density. And then the other one is like 170 double-density discs that my friend Tom in America, Tom Lipschultz, who you've heard in earlier episodes, sent to me from an eBay listing. The guy said, best offer, and he offered $70, and the guy took it. Which is a much, much, much better price. I mean, that's at least half, if not triple, or a third of the cost that it would have been in Japan to buy that. But none of those have sleeves, so I have been printing out, cutting, and gluing my own sleeves for those floppy disks. So that's fun. And I wanted to mention that because that also came in a present, which I'm going to talk about later when we talk about Christmas gifts and presents and things. Now let's move on to a really fun little game here. This is a game called Santa Claus no Takarabako. Oh, I said it wrong. Takarabako. There we go. And this means Santa's treasure box or treasure chest. And basically this is a game for the Famicom Disk System. And it's really, really weird. It's a Santa Claus Christmas card game thing. You could call it a game. It's barely that. And it's on a Famicom Disk System, which means, you know, it's a floppy disk. And what's nice about that is that anything you do in it, you can save directly onto the disk. And I think the idea was that you were supposed to take a disk and just, like, write it on there, make a Christmas card, and then give it to your friend. And your friend could swap it back to you. And then I guess whenever you were done, you just take it to the store and write something else over it. But there are, you know, actual copies of it with the instruction manual and all that kind of stuff. But so, Santa Claus no Takarabako Bako. I keep saying Boko, and that's not right. Santa Claus no Takarabako. I'm just going to say Santa Claus's treasure chest from now on. So what is this game? So like I said, it's a Christmas card game, but you get to design it. So on the there's a kind of open graphic, and on the graphic you have a house with snow. It looks like a mansion. It actually looks kind of like a creepy mansion, like a horror mystery kind of mansion. and there's snow all around, and Santa Claus is walking across the bottom of the screen, little animated Santa Claus. And you can find videos about this on YouTube, but I want to tell you about it. And a fun story. So Santa Claus walks across the screen, and there's text at the bottom that shows up. And what you can do is you can change the text. You can write whatever text you want to. And you can also redesign the Santa Claus. So there's a Santa Claus editor. It's a pixel editor. So you can go in frame by frame of animation, and you can change Santa Claus. You could draw a reindeer in if you wanted to, or you could give Santa Claus a green hat instead of a red one, or something else. Then you can change the message. And so I guess if you wanted to, you could pass that on to your friends, and then they'd see the message, and yay, or give it to your loved one, and, you know, I love you so much. Here's your Christmas present from me. Oh, thank you. Let me put it into my Famicom disk system. Yeah, because people do that at Christmas, right? So anyway, it's a cute idea, I guess. The other thing that's on it, just in case that's you don't really want to see a Santa Claus Christmas card, is some mini games. And they're really, it's called party games in there. And basically, it is the kind of games you'd play at a party. There's bingo, there's a roulette game, there's a slot machine game, and there's one other, what is it? Bingo, roulette, slot machine, and something else like casino-y sounding. I don't remember what the other thing is all of a sudden. But you could play these with friends at a Christmas party if you wanted to. The animations for them are kind of slow and long and drawn out, so I don't necessarily think I would recommend it, but it might be fun enough for a bingo. It's got like a bingo board, and the little cursor goes in and then slows down like it's going to stop. And then it takes like 10 seconds to stop, it seems. It's like, and you're like, oh, hurry up, please. So it's not really even all that useful for bingo. But nevertheless, it is Santa Claus treasure chest. And so here's how this game came into my life. A friend of mine, Logan, who used to live here in Japan with me, we went to a game store and we saw some Famicom discs. Games, and we decided they were really cheap, so we would buy a few and see, you know, what we got, because you never can tell with Famicom disk systems. Sometimes the games are what they say they are, and sometimes they're nothing like what they say they are. So we bought some games, and we decided to make a mystery game and see what it was. So we took it home, we opened it up, put them in, and one of them was this Santa Claus game. We were like, what is this? Because we'd never heard of it. And so we thought it was the silliest thing in the world. So then we realized that you could redraw the Santa Claus, and you could also write your own message. And so Logan, I think, had the idea that we should do something completely inappropriate. And so what we did was, and I'm ashamed to say, sort of, we drew a very naughty thing. We drew Santa's package, his special delivery, in the animation, so that he walked towards you with a special delivery gift for you from Santa. And then we put something in the message that was also equally inappropriate, like, here's your present, you bleepy bleepy, or something. I don't know what we did. And we saved it, figured out how to save it, and then I don't know, I think he still has it. I wish he'd kind of pull it out and tell me about it, because I haven't seen it in a couple years now. But it was just this weird memory of, like, suddenly having this Christmas thing and doing something really fun with it. So, if you want to, you could get a copy or get a file off of the internet, I guess, if it's still around, of Santa Claus's treasure chest, Santa Claus no Takarabako. Download it or put it in your Famicom disk system. Make whatever kind of hilariously awful card you want, and then make a video and upload it to the internet, or send it to a friend, or something like that. You could do that sort of thing, and turn it into a new Christmas tradition, where people all over the world are giving ripped-off copies of Santa Claus's treasure chest with inappropriate messages. But I don't think that's going to be a thing. But it could be. Maybe I'll put that on Twitter. Next, I want to talk to you about something that happened to me last week, and it involves a game called Christmas Stories Nutcracker. So there's a guy on YouTube that a lot of you probably know who's called Lazy Game Reviewer, LGR for short. and he reviews games. Imagine that. And he decided to do a Christmas-themed game, because I think he really likes Christmas based on his Twitter. He just seems to really like Christmas. And so he decided to do a review of a Christmas game, and he chose a game that was one of these, hidden object games? Kind of a point-and-click, like, find all the objects and... But it was also kind of an adventure game, too, and so it was really cool. And he was talking about this game, and it looked like it was going to be, stupid, because it's kind of one of those, $10 Walmart bargain bin games. Like, it's the kind of game you would see at Walmart. I think this company actually does sell them at Walmart. In fact, I think he bought his at Walmart, maybe. But he played it, and it looked really not bad. It looked kind of awesome, and it had this really cool story about the Nutcracker trying to save his girlfriend, who was turned into a doll from the Rat King, who uses magic, and then it gets all creepy and weird, and it's all these, ambient sound effects, and hidden doors, and, a weird alchemy lab, and all these creepy stuff, and it looked really neat. My friend Tom posted it and shared it to people and said, hey, you might want to check this out. And so I looked at it and I was like, wow, this does look interesting. And then I got the idea, well, what if I make my students play it? So I went online and found it on Steam and bought it and then brought it into my English conversation class, which my English conversation class lasts about an hour or two usually after school for third year students, because they don't really have any extra time a lot for third year students because they're getting ready for exams. So they don't get as much English as they usually want to. And I try to have an extra class after school for them if they want to, just to practice sort of basic conversational, casual English, not textbook English. Every year this gets turned into something different than what I originally planned it, because we go towards what they like. And this year, it became a very sort of otaku thing, because we ended up with three girls in the class that were really interested in games and things like that, and we played a bunch of different games. We tried some visual novels and things like that. And so we decided to have a Christmas party for the last game that we were going to play before we have to end the thing and they have to go off and do their studies for their exams, because school ends a little bit early for third year students. They end in January, I think it is, or early February. Even though the school year doesn't end until March. So there's a month and a half where the third year students are not there anymore. And so we always have to stop my conversation class around Christmas time. So we had a day where we had no classes after lunch because it was test returning day. And so we decided to have a party. And we went to this one classroom and we set up the TV with the computer there. And we got out the Christmas Stories Nutcracker game, and we started playing it, and the girls loved it, and they were really, really interested in it. And so I decided this was great, so I took a picture of it, and of course I kept their faces out, it's a picture from behind, you can't see who they are because Japan has weird privacy laws. There's a tidbit of information for you about picking people's pictures. So with their permission, I took a picture of the back of their heads while they were playing the game, and I posted it to the Lazy Game Reviewer on Twitter, saying, based on your review, we decided to play this game here in my English class in Japan. He was like, that's so cool. And he retweeted it and liked it. And suddenly, 150 people were also liking it. And I was like, wow, this is great. So that was really cool. And it helped me, but it also helped my students, because they actually sat there and played that game for 4 hours until they finished it completely, which was really cool to me. So if you get a chance, really do recommend, like the Lazy Game Reviewer said, do try out the Christmas Stories Nutcracker. It's really fun. I missed a few segments of myself because I was had to leave to take care of some stuff. And they did that section all by themselves without me. So I'm going to have to go back and play it myself to do those sections that were missed and see what I missed there, and check out the story for myself, because it looks really, really interesting. So you can find that online. It's Christmas Stories Nutcracker, and it's not a retro game, but it is a Christmas game, and it's a really cool Christmas game, actually, even though it seems really silly. So you've been hearing some music from Christmas Lemmings, otherwise known as Xmas Lemmings, depending on how you want to pronounce it, but Christmas Lemmings. So Lemmings is a DOS game that Lazy Game Reviewer also apparently really, really likes, and So he shared this post on Twitter about the Christmas Lemmings, and it's the end screen of the game. It's either the end screen or the beginning screen. I'm not really sure which. And it has a message about Christmas. And so what I've done is I have actually typed this message out and printed it on my PC 9801 printer, dot matrix printer. And I'm going to read this Christmas message to you. Also, you have been listening to music and sound effects from the Lemmings game in the background. So if you enjoyed Lemmings when you were a kid, I was not a huge fan of it. My cousin had it, and I saw it at his house, but I didn't really get to play it much. And then my cousin lived in Texas, and I lived in North Carolina, so it was, you know, like 18 hours away. And nobody I knew had the game, so I didn't really get into it. But it's cool, and it's there. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to print out some stories. So here's the thing. After looking at the Lazy Game Reviewer's posts on the Christmas Lemmings thing, I said that I was going to mention that in my Christmas episode. And then I also said that I'm trying to get stories from people who, about, you know, the Christmas, people who listen to the podcast or don't listen to the podcast, it's memories of Christmas for them. And I asked if he wanted to share one. And he did. And he retweeted it. And so I got a whole bunch of his listeners and his, you know, Twitter followers sending me Christmas stories. So I'm going to read all of them. And while I'm reading you the Christmas Lemmings thing, I'm also going to print out the stories. I have actually typed, copied, and pasted all of the stories into a text file. And then I have used... Okay, so let me explain this whole process here. I have put these into a floppy disk that goes into my PC98 computer. And how I did that is really silly and confusing. I had a USB flash drive that I kept with me all week, and I took all the stories. Anytime someone sent me a story, I copied and pasted it into a text file and saved it onto this USB drive. So all throughout the week, Twitter and Facebook and things, messages came in, and I collected them all. Then what I did was I took the USB drive to my computer here in my computer room slash bedroom, and I copied the files into a disk image. Okay, so there's a program called Magic ISO that allows you to make disk images of floppy disks or other types of disks, CD images and that kind of thing. So I made a disk image of a floppy disk with the file that I wanted, the text file, on that floppy disk image, and then I saved it as a floppy disk image. Okay, then I used a program to convert it to the special format called D88, which is used for PC88 and PC98 disk images. So I converted it to that. Then I used XDiskWin, which if you followed my Twitter, you'll note that I have made a video about how to write disk images for the PC88, and also it can be used for the PC98. Someone pointed out to me. So I made the disk image, made it into a file, transferred it into the format D88. Then I used this program to send it over a COM cable to the PC88 and write it to a floppy disk. Then I took that floppy disk out of my PC88, 5 1/4 inch floppy disk, which is part of the problem here, put it into the drive on my PC98 system, opened it up. Then I found out that it was the wrong text encoding because Windows 3.1 doesn't have Unicode yet. So I had to save it on my computer again as ANSI, then do that whole process over again, just copy it one more time, and then I got it on my computer. Why did I do all of that, you say? Why am I not just reading it off the screen in front of me or on an iPad? Well, that's because I'm going to print it on my dot matrix printer. I'm going to print out all of your stories, and you can hear the sound of the printer printing as I read to you this Christmas message from Christmas Lemmings. Take you back to the world of 1992. So let's hit the print button. Okay, here we go. And I think this is going to work. Maybe you can hear that wonderful sound. It is now feeding the paper through. And there it is. So, the sound of 1992. Let's start. Christmas Lemmings. Can't get enough of those Yule-bedecked, green-haired numbskulls? All of a sudden, you have an insistent, compulsive need to save those bouncing little rodents. Face it, you're hooked.
Oh no! More lemmings and lemmings, with 220 combined challenging play levels featuring hordes of roaming rodents, is available at your local computer software retailers. Or you can order by calling 1-800-GET-PSY-G. That's 438-7794. Have a cool Yule and save the lemmings! Lemmings, copyright 1992, Cyanosis Limited. Press any key to continue. So, that's what you see on the screen, and you see it's in a black screen like NDOS would have with regular, you know, I think the text is like colored, like some of it's green and some of it's blue and that kind of thing, but it's kind of Christmas-y themed. And that's what he posted along with Have a Cool Yule. So, that's what we're going to do now. We're going to have a cool Yule, and I'm going to tell you some stories about Christmas. And while this is printing, it's going to take a little bit here. You can hear it in the background zipping away, I think. I got a Christmas present. I got a big box from my friend Tom Lipschultz, and it was really, really cool. So this big box is very, very, very heavy, and probably was very, very expensive on the shipping. And he sent me this, and in it, I'm going to tell you some of the stuff that was in it. It's really, really cool. So he sent me a combination of things that he didn't need anymore, because he's moving, I think, and also things that he bought for me for Christmas, and also things that he's sending me to hold on to for him as he's moving, that he wants to get once he gets here to Japan. So with that, I got a lot of really cool stuff that showed up, and there's some pictures on my Twitter. If you go to @DoorDonePodcast, you can find that, and you'll see lots and lots of pictures of some really cool stuff. So I'm just going to tell you some of the things that came in. We got, we got a copy of Coldcept on PS2, and also we got, what's the other PS2 game that we got? Fatal Frame, the first Fatal Frame. I got Fragile Dreams on the Wii, and also a Japanese copy of Captain Rainbow, which is a Nintendo weirdness game that I've always wanted to play and never got a chance to. What else did we get? Well, we got Crystallis on the Game Boy Color, which a lot of people really hate. I've played it. I didn't hate it. I can understand why fans of the original would hate it. But yeah. So that's, you know, take it or leave it. There was also Choo Choo Rocket on the Game Boy Advance, a game called Hectarus. I don't know, it's like a weird puzzle game where there's these hexagonal boards and you gotta put pieces on them, but I couldn't figure out exactly what I was supposed to do. So that's a thing. And I also got, Ninja Turtles Follow the Foot Clan for Game Boy, which I had as a kid, and I forgot I had as a kid, so now I have to add a section on that into my book. I got Dragon Quest Heroes on the PlayStation 4, which Tom's not sure where that came from exactly, but it came and he didn't really see himself playing it, so he sent it to me, which is cool because I really wanted to play that game for a while, so thanks very much for that. We also got a ton of MSX stuff. We got some new MSX games that are their homebrewed games that just came out recently. And there's Zero, Ex-Spelunker, this is something about a chalice? Golden Chalice? Oh, Quest for the Golden Chalice, yes. Zero and the Castle of Infinite Sadness, okay. So that's three MSX homebrew games. Also got a copy of Etrian Odyssey 3 for the DS, which is a game that I actually really wanted to play for a while. And then I also got Retroware Presents the Video Game Years, Volume 1, 1977-79, which is a DVD, like a documentary DVD, which looks really cool. Then there's also some Super Nintendo. I got Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, two NES games that Tom picked up for me, Hoops and Double Dribble, sports games that I never would buy on my own, but he found them at a local store for like $2 each or something like that, and they happen to be games. Oh no. Paper jam. There's a paper jam in my printer. Oh no, come on out, paper. Oh no.
So for people who are listening right now, what has just happened is the paper has jammed in my printer, and I went to twist the knob, and the knob fell off. So I'm going to take half a second here and fix this. Okay, and we're back, and hopefully this will work now. So we're on to print page 4 and 5. Anyway, we also have some cool items. So we got Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, I mentioned that, Hoops and Double Dribble, which are in my book. And then the other thing that we got was a whole bunch of tape games that Tom sent me that are his. And there's some really weird stuff like Disneyland, which is a weird text adventure kind of Disneyland, well, I guess it's graphical adventure, Disneyland ripoff kind of game. It's like a murder mystery inside of a ripoff of Disneyland. I got Mystery House. Oh, I got X-Blades, by the way. I also got that on PS3, which is a game that I always wanted to play. I played it a little bit at one point when it first came out, but didn't play it much after that. So I always wanted to really play it because I just got to borrow it, basically. I have Altered Beast, which he sent, which is on tape. That's his also. Tritorn, Star Arthur. Tritorn on cassette is something I really want to mess with, because as we saw in my video, I've messed with other versions of Tritorn before. But yeah, there's a ton of stuff. There's a bunch of stuff from Europe, which the European games are really, really strange. There's stuff like Howard the Duck, Panique, which has a topless woman. Well, no, it's a woman with a like a red silky dress, and like half of the dress is off, so she's got like one breast exposed, but she's also got a snake head for a head, which is odd. It's a super, super mega hyper girl looking like 80s, like late 70s, early 80s, like metal band looking knight dude for version of Hydlide, which is impressive on its own. There's a game called Ink. There's a game called Protector, which has a cover that looks like it was a Kurt Russell movie. There's another one called Inca, which also looks like a Kurt Russell movie. Yeah, it's some weird stuff. There's some other games that he sent also for on tape in a big box of tapes, including The Growing Pains of Adrian Mole, a game called Booty, and so on. So that's really cool, and opening that up for Christmas was just really neat. Oh, here we go. Here's the Hexite. Hexite is the name of that game that I was talking about on the Game Boy. Oh, and also Alex Kidd on the Sega Genesis. I forgot about that one. And then there's some few anime and so on. Also, there was the box of 170 floppy disks, which all need sleeves. So I'm working on that. So that was a pretty cool Christmas present that I got this year. Another friend of mine, Robin, so hello to you, Robin, sent me a Christmas present. And one of them is a game for the Super Nintendo, or Super Famicom. It's a new game. It's a brawler. Super Famicom brawler, Gurume Sentai Barayaro. That's it. So this is it appears to be another game from Columbus Circle. Which, it's a weird little game. Looks like it was developed in 1995. And this is being re-released, I guess, because it's apparently really rare. Kind of like the other game they did, but they re-released one. What's that called? I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head. But it's like a sort of a mix of Castlevania and Contra. It's like Daimao or something like that. I don't remember. You're a dude who's got like a gun and a fairy that follows him around, and you can like shoot zombie monster demons and things, but you can also turn into demons. And yeah, it's weird. So yes, Robin got me this game, which is a brawler where you're this like team of like super Bara, like there's like the Choaniki looking guys, if you've ever seen that. And there's like a woman with really, really, really big boobs in tight things, and they just go around beating stuff up like you would do in a brawler. It's really bizarre looking, and you know, that kind of thing. So I got that for Christmas, so thank you very much for that. So those are Christmas present stories. Now, instead of Christmas present, let's talk about Christmas past. Get it? I made a pun. Yes, so we're going to tell some stories here. And I want to start out with a story from Rowan Carmichael. Rowan Carmichael is a friend of mine here who also does a podcast. And this podcast is called Pitfalls and Platforms. I think I said that right. I hope I didn't say it backwards. I believe it's Pitfalls and Platforms, not Platforms and Pitfalls. If I got it wrong, I apologize. I don't have it up in front of me off the top of my head, so I can't look at it. But it's a really cool little podcast that he's put together with a guy named Blue. And they basically talk about design elements of video games. They choose a theme about a certain design element, and they take several games and analyze the good and bad points of that design element. So they didn't. I've listened to two of the episodes so far. They did one about scaling difficulties, and then one about single-player modes in fighting games. And now that I think about it, I've actually heard three episodes. They also did one about item durability, which I think is an interesting concept that's almost always hated, but sometimes can be cool. So they have this podcast, and Rowan has kindly recorded for us his Christmas story. So gather around the fireplace, kids. It's story time.
Merry Christmas, Doors and Dungeons. You're asking for Christmas memories, so here's mine. My first Christmas memory ever, not gaming specific, is getting a Mega Drive for Christmas. It was a combined present for me, my sister, and brother. But the thing that excited us most was not the shiny new Mega Drive games. It was the Power Base Converter and Asterix. And actually, for the longest time, I thought the Master System games were the better games, since you needed an accessory to play them, and it happened to be that a lot of the Master System games we got were much better than the Mega Drive games we had outside of Sonic. So that's my first gaming Christmas memory. Getting a Mega Drive, thinking that the Master System was better, which is the way that we should all think, really.
Thank you very much, Rowan. So I want to say that I haven't played enough of the Mega Drive or the Master System to know if that's true. I do have quite a decent number of Mega Drive games, but very few, if any, Master System games because of the difficulty of getting the Power Base Converters and also how they don't fit the cartridge slots between the American version and the Japanese version, and I can't use it on my Retron 5 to translate the games into English that I had, so it's kind of a hassle. So unfortunately, I just don't have enough experience with Master System. Next, let's go on to Lazy Game Reviewer. So Lazy Game Reviewer said, and thank you very much for this, by the way, best Christmas memory is receiving SimCity 2000 for DOS. Asked for it as my one gift all year, but Christmas morning at home came and went with no SimCity 2000. Was so bummed. Then went to Grandma's, who had never once gotten me a game before. She had SimCity 2000 under the tree. Legit cried. Thank you so much. That's a cool story. I know that I got SimCity 2000 with our first family PC. I tinkered with a few PCs before, trying to like build one with from spare parts and things like that at my mom's house. But at my dad's house, we weren't allowed to have a PC with internet or anything like that. And so finally, during my junior year of high school, we got a PC that was pre-built and everything. It was like a good quality, like a high-grade Pentium 1, I believe it was, with a 56K modem and all that fun stuff. And I remember also getting SimCity 2000 for Christmas with that, and I really, really liked that game, so that was cool too. So I'd completely forgotten that I even got that game until he said that. So, thank you for reminding me about my own Christmas memory. Our next story comes from my friend Mike Hudak, who wrote the theme song for the Doors and Dungeons podcast and used to be my neighbor. He says, after playing consoles for years at neighbors' or relatives' houses, my parents got me and my brother the Sega Genesis Sonic 2 bundle for Christmas in 1995. I remember the mesmerizing effect that first level had on me, playing it in my own house for the first time. Like the TV screen was a window to another world that was always there on the other side of my basement wall, that I just never had a view to until then. I actually couldn't beat the second level for over half a year, but I found a code to unlock the sound test in a bookstore, so I would listen to the music for the parts of the games I hadn't played yet. A great way to get introduced to game music, really. I'm usually pretty brutal on games I'm nostalgic for after going back and playing them, but I honestly think that game is one of the best Sega ever made, even now. And that Christmas was a super important one in terms of shaping my sensibilities and hobbies, traced all the way up to today. That I love because I feel the same way. You can trace your history through these games that you've played and sort of build up an oral history of yourself via the games that you sat down and played, the music that you listened to in those games, so that's really cool. Rafael Lima de Souza says, I once spent Christmas on a Quake 2 server. I was 15 years old. The server had more people playing than usual, which really surprised me. That's cool. That's a good way to spend Christmas. And I believe that comes from... Where does that come from? That's on Facebook. I believe that comes from the MSX Home Computers group. Angela Sana from the MSX Home Computers says, well, yes, I got my first MSX in 1988 when I was 12. I owned an NMS8220 MSX2 with built-in MSX Designer and a data recorder with some games, 30 MSX hits from Eurosoft Premium Software. I started with the VideoPak G7400 from Philips in 1984. That was my first real console. I guess Mr. Kazuhiko Nishi would love such stories. It tells so much about how people grew up with computers, in this case, 8-bit computers, and the step to the internet. My story is not important. It is one of so many stories of pioneers in the MSX scene that make a difference. It tells how the impact was for those people and what it brought today. And considering the way homebrew is in the MSX now, I think I would agree with that statement very, very much. So thank you, Angela. Next we have Hugo Dufour. Hope I'm saying that correctly, also from the MSX computers. He says, when I was 11 years old, we were playing board games and my uncle dropped the hourglass on the floor and broke it. So I took 15 minutes to program a really nice 3-minute countdown program on my Tandy color computer with giant numbers displayed on screen. I saved the Christmas Eve family party. Later, I added functionalities to this program, such as dice throw, random team making, and random player selection. It became some kind of a board game helper program that we used at many occasions. Wow! That's cool! So you saved Christmas with your Tandy and programming skills. Awesome! Next, we have Carlos Camacho, who's from the Japanese Retro Computers group on Facebook. He says, one Christmas, I ran downstairs to find Santa playing Dungeons of Daggeroth. I told that guy he better take his red glove palms off my cocoa. He never came back after that. But no worries, since I made my own game and gave them to myself. Next we have SQPat from the PC98 Discord server. And he says, I pretended to believe in Santa Claus one more year to get Secret of Mana for Christmas. Nice. Next we have, on Twitter, John Best at WinterMute21. I got Tomb Raider 2 a few months after it came out for the Christmas of 1997, and it was the best thing ever. Tristan at Twaddington says, The Sims 2 and Diablo 2. I remember installing The Sims and playing, like, all day. At HP Bifta says, Not quite gaming direct, but for 3 years when young, all I wanted was a printer for my Commodore 64 to make my life easier while I was learning to program the machine, because I was trying to make games. I never got it. My parents could never understand why I was miffed and disappointed. And I did ask every year for both birthday and Christmas. I even stated that I would go without any other presents. Still, no joy. It didn't affect me, honest. Yep, still resentful over 30 years later. Never mind! I did get a Metroplex Transformer on the first year I asked, and 1 year they did buy me Last Ninja 3 on cartridge though, which almost made up for it. So I told HP Beef that I almost wanted to buy him a printer at this point, and he said, nah, it's too late. The Commodore's gone, and I've moved on. Josh at Crazy Kickboxer says, I was about 8 or 9, and my oldest sister got me Police Quest 2, one of the most exciting gifts I have ever received. I'll bet! Police Quest 2 is a really interesting and weird game, and I remember we had it for some reason in my school's computer lab, which is odd because it's the kind of game that you wouldn't normally allow in a Christian school, but nevertheless, it got a, we kind of got through the radar, got under the radar. And I remember only two things about that game. One thing is, I remember there was a, I think this was Police Quest 2, I don't remember, you get them confused which one it was, but I think it was 2. There was a changing room, and you could try to sneak into the women's changing room at the police department instead of the men's, and a lady would come out with like a skirt and her bra, it was like changing clothes, and would yell at you. And remember, we were all like, ooh, because it was a woman in a bra. I don't know. And the other thing I remember was, there was a scene where there was a guy drowning and you had to rescue him, but if you got in the water to try and rescue him, he would drown you instead. He would like grab you and you would drown. And never could figure out how to beat that part. And that's what I remember about Police Quest. Next, Tristan at Tito Delito says, my grandma got me Destroy All Humans on PS2, and when I opened it and exclaimed the title, she said, no, we shouldn't be destroying all the humans. Like she didn't read the title when she bought it? Yes. No, we shouldn't be destroying all the humans. Just some of them, I guess? Grandma's hardcore. Chris at ChrisPeters2311 says, when I was little, me and my family went to my aunt, uncle, and cousins on Boxing Day, and they had an Amiga, and they booted up Oh No More Lemmings. I was hooked. Was playing it all the time I was there, and the next day I bought it for my Atari 520 STFM. So that's a neat story, and actually because of that story, I decided to look up the Atari 520 STFM because I wasn't all that familiar with it, and it's a neat little system. You should look into that. Next, we have Matthew at ZyphosB4 on Twitter. He says, best Christmas-related game memory? Probably the year I got a PlayStation and my parents had the foresight to buy Final Fantasy VII along with it. I stayed up well past midnight playing that first night. Our next story is really emotional and it comes from Jim Cook, aka Electric Dad, at Jim S. Cook. After my dad died, things were tight, so I kept my list small. I gave my mom a list of 3 Atari 2600 games to pick from. Didn't get any, and instead found my first computer, a VIC-20 under the tree. Wow. That's just so amazing to think that your mom, you're trying to help out, you're trying to make sure that your list is small, things were tight, and suddenly your mom turns around and gets you a brand new computer. That's just really amazing, and it's one of those memories where, I mean, you can't beat that kind of a memory. Like, those are just the things in life that are really cool, and yeah, okay, it's a computer, yeah, it's okay, it's a video game, but it has impact, and I really think that's important. I remember kind of the same feeling when my mom saved all of her money to get me a Game Boy for my birthday, even though she really didn't have the money and it was really tight on her. I was so thrilled because I knew that she really couldn't have afforded it, but she did. So I just wanted to say thank you, really thank you to Jim for sharing that story. And let's go now to the Space Ferret at the_SpaceFerret. When I was a kid, I dreamt I got something red for Christmas. I woke up, opened my present, and there was a Transformers Inferno. The end! Amelia at Surrealist Gal says, a good memory was setting up Animal Crossing Wild World late at night at my grandmother's house as the Christmas get-together ended. Ashley Fujoshi Princess at Ashley Uncia says, it was the last day of school before Christmas 1997. Kids didn't do much work then, and a lot of us hung out in the computer labs and such. There were some older kids there were playing this amazing and colorful game they brought in, Transport Tycoon. It must have been December 19th or around there. I had never heard of this game before then, and I would not shut up about it as Christmas approached. I just adored the look of it. Somehow Santa actually managed to get it under the tree that year. I was still playing the game at 5 a.m. on our 200 MHz Pentium and put many hours on it since, including Transport Tycoon Deluxe, Transport Tycoon Deluxe Patch, and OpenTTD in many years following. That's cool! I love those kinds of computer lab stories from school because I'd had some memories of my own like that. Descent and Age of Empires and stuff like that. Non-traditional student at or underscore rain says, my parents got us an NES that had Rob the Robot with it, and they wanted my brother to open it last. Unfortunately, my mom forgot she had wrapped an issue of Nintendo Power separately, and he grabbed that and opened that first, ruining the surprise. I think she almost cried. Ah, that's the worst. That does happen. You have Christmas presents and you put them in there and they're like connected to each other, and you forget and put them in the wrong order. My mom used to do that all the time. She'd always say, oh no, you weren't supposed to open that one yet. Oops, well, okay, I guess you better open this one now. Next is Jingle Beep at Lenny Beep. My dad told me the story being up to 3 a.m. trying to get the Mega Drive set up to make sure it worked, then carefully putting it back in the box to wrap. Christmas morning, my two brothers had it opened and set up in minutes, then took turns playing Sonic and playing with the box. Hoshi at Falling Hoshi says, when I was a kid, Santa's gift was unwrapped so I could play with it and not wake up everyone to open presents. The year Santa got my Pokemon Red, everyone else got to sleep in on Christmas. Nice. Max Playground at Max Playground says, I remember my parents had trouble affording consoles and games when I was a kid, so I never bothered asking for a PS2 as my PlayStation 1 was still working perfectly. I woke up Christmas morning and unwrapped a new PS2 with brand new GTA Vice City and Jak and Daxter. Legit cried. Next, from the Jet Gaming Group on Facebook, we have Brenda Zavala. She says, I got games for Christmas all the time, but this one is the one that sticks in my mind the most. When I was still in elementary, my parents got me and my older brother a PS2 with Kingdom Hearts 1 for Christmas. We heard a lot of good things about the game at school, so we were super excited to play it. We booted it up, super hyped to play. It wasn't until we got to the save point in Destiny Islands that we realized our parents didn't buy us a PS2 memory card, and the PS1 ones weren't compatible with it. I had to watch the game for like an hour as my dad took my brother to the store on Christmas Day to get a memory card. I think I spent all that time either catching fish or getting coconuts. Oh dear. Vivi Wood, also from the Jet Gaming Group, says, we used to have the most wonderful Christmases with my family at my grandparents' house. I remember one year we'd finished opening up all our presents, had eaten dinner, and me and my siblings went upstairs to play with our new toys. About 20 minutes later, my mom was calling us to come down and help with the cleaning in an angry tone. We all nervously crept downstairs to find in the kitchen, where all the washing should have been, a brand new Nintendo 64 for us and everyone saying Merry Christmas! They got us real good. We've treasured that Nintendo 64 and it still gets regularly played. Marla Uribe says, once when I was like 7 years old or so, I decided to sleep on the sofa near the Christmas tree to camp out for Santa Claus. The sofa was right next to the Christmas tree, so I fell asleep there with my blanket determined to catch Santa. Anyways, I knocked out, and when I woke up the next day, underneath the blanket and my legs was my Christmas present. It was my Game Boy with Pokemon Yellow. I was convinced that Santa Claus existed, and he was one sneaky and cheeky guy for making the present appear right underneath my legs. My parents must have laughed seeing me camping for Santa by the tree and decided to pull a fast one on me. But doesn't matter, got Game Boy Color and Pokemon Yellow. Also, another year, my mom wrapped my older brother's Pokemon Gold box inside a cereal box, his favorite brand, and when he opened it, he got mad, especially when he saw that I had gotten my Pokemon Silver. My mom ripped it normally. I'm pretty sure he was about to cry until my mom told him he should open the cereal box. By the way, I love doing that. I love taking gifts and putting them into weird boxes, and you open them up and people are like, what did you get me? Why do I have shoes? Or, you know, what is Pocky? I don't even know what Pocky is. I did that to my family one time. I got them a box of Pocky and put a gift card or something inside of it. But then my aunt got me back one year because she put some bottles of soda. She bought some bottles of soda and a gift card, which I asked for the bottles of soda. And she put them in a box with several bricks. So it was this huge, big, heavy box with bricks. And we opened it up, and there were these bricks. And then there was soda and there was a gift card, and I got them out, and she said, well, I thought it was just a little boring to put like sodas in with a gift card by itself, so I decided to put some bricks in there to make it more interesting. I was like, that's cool, I'm totally keeping these. And she goes, no, I need those for my garden. They were actual bricks from her actual garden. She had to take them back from me. I didn't get to keep the bricks. Okay, Michael Marischal says, 5 years ago, I was just playing Pokemon Y on Christmas Eve. I had beaten the game and was hatching Torchic eggs. One of the eggs I hatched ends up being a shiny Torchic with 3 perfect IVs, which, if you don't know about Pokemon breeding, it's a pretty rare occurrence, something like 1 in 4,000. Then, the next day, I play the in-game lottery and win the Master Ball, which again has a pretty low chance of occurring, maybe also around 1 in 4,000. So 2 1 in 4,000 odds things happen on Christmas within 24 hours of each other. I don't know how Santa managed to fit into a 3DS, but somehow he did it. I refuse to accept any other explanation. Jessica Frederick says, so I do all the present wrapping at my house, or did when I was home. This has led to situations where my other family members will be wrapping my gifts moments before I'm opening them. So one year, my brother gets me a gift and tells me he's just going to hand it to me. I tell him no, that I want something to open. So he comes back with an unwrapped shoebox. Tells me I can open the gift now. I do, and he's just stuffed a single sheet of wrapping paper in the box. I pick it out and there's nothing inside. I roll my eyes at him and hand him the box back. He puts it under the tree. Later, we're actually opening gifts, and he hands me the box again. I insist that I already opened it. He insists that there really is a gift inside. So I open it, and this time I notice he had taped a Game Boy Advance cartridge to the lid, and I had completely missed it before because it was so small. This is about 15 years ago, but it's still the memory I have of opening gifts. Also, it was Breath of Fire. Stacy Gress says, last year during Christmas, I dusted off my old Nintendo 64 and showed my high school age niece and nephew the party that is Bomberman 64 multiplayer. We had a blast. Nice pun, and also it's really fun to take your relatives and show them old games, because they get into it and they don't even realize they're playing something that's so old. Next, Teresa Pinhey says, I moved across the country when I was 12, leaving my extended family, including my only girl cousin that was very close to me. 7 years later, I managed to visit and we got close again, but she said how her parents gave her strict screen time, and I felt devious and wanted a new 3DS, so I gave her my old one for Christmas. The never-ending texts of her playing Pokemon and Animal Crossing, just awesome. That is pretty sneaky, I like that. Juan Barton says, my brother and I couldn't sleep one year on Christmas Eve, and Smash Brothers had just come out on Nintendo 64. We must have been 10 and 9 years old, so I don't think we believed in Santa anymore, but it was still too exciting to sleep. We played 99 Stock Lives Versus, and I was Link, and Marco was Kirby, and we had AI. We were up half the night. What we didn't know was, our mom was also up, waiting for us to put our light out so that she could bring out all the presents and put them under the tree. She waited until we tired ourselves out. Must have been 2 or 3 a.m. Another story, my mom and I pulled a wishbone once. I won. She said, I bet I know what you wish for, and pulled out this arcade thing. It was a console that had arcade games built into it. I thought she was a witch or had magic powers, for I had indeed wished for my very own arcade. I'm going magic on that. Our last story comes from Christopher. That's Christopher, split into two. And he says, one year I got my parents a gift. I don't remember what it was. But instead of conventionally wrapping it, I found as many different sized boxes as possible and put them in each other like Russian nesting dolls. Once they finished opening the smallest box, they found a note saying their present was in the closet. Well, it's not exactly a gaming story, but I did find it so funny that I just had to put it in there. I do like the idea. I think I actually should do that. I should put it in there, and I should have that picture from Mario where Toad's like, your princess is in another castle, but instead it says, your present is in another castle, and you gotta go find it. That'd be cool. So, I want to say thank you to everyone who has given us a story. And if I mispronounce anyone's names, I'm terribly sorry, but really thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it. It was so much fun to collect them, read them, print them out, read them on the air. I really enjoyed that. So thank you for making this Christmas extra special for me and for this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please check us out. We are on Twitter. It's at DoorDun Podcast. That's at Door, D-U-N Podcast. Please give us a follow. I think we got like 5 or 6 followers based on Lazy Game Reviewer's help. So I really, really want to thank him for that. Also, check out the Patreon if you're interested. And also, please stay tuned. I think I'm going to take a break for Christmas because I've got a trip planned and some other holiday-themed stuff going on. So I'm going to take a little bit of time off, and then we'll see you again in 2019. Sometime in January, probably the second week of January, I think, is when we'll come back. So I will see you then. Please be sure to keep looking for us and follow us on Twitter and keep in track, and maybe I'll make a Facebook page before then. So you've been listening to Doors and Dungeons Retro Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle. Merry Christmas!